And the court will proceed to the third case of the day, Lagunas-Salgado v. Holder. Mr. Berg.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Royal F. Berg, and I represent the petitioner in this next matter before you today, Mr. Jesus Lagunas-Salgado. Your Honors, as of this morning, the motion to reopen that I filed in this case is still pending at the Board of Immigration Appeals. As I advised the Court on February 27, 2009, granted a motion to reopen in the case of Mr. Salgado, a man with a similar name and a similar situation. The Board granted that our motion, which was based on the convulsing violence in Mexico and the harm to Mr. Salgado and his family, should he be deported back to Mexico. We have filed a similar motion to the Board, citing the violence in Mexico, the number of killings and the horrific things that are happening there, in the case of Mr. Lagunas-Salgado, this petition before you today. We believe the Board can, should, and will grant the motion, provided Mr. Lagunas-Salgado is still in the country. The Board takes the position that once a person is deported, it no longer has jurisdiction to grant a motion to reopen. Therefore, we would ask, Your Honors, before we get into the substance today of our argument, and we would like to just spread a record, that we would ask you to simply hold these proceedings in abeyance to give the Board an opportunity to rule on our motion to reopen and address the convulsing violence in Mexico. Or alternatively, remand the proceedings to the Board and direct them to address what is happening in Mexico. It did reopen the case of Mr. Salgado, February 27, 2009. We believe that it can and should reopen the case of Mr. Lagunas-Salgado. I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes.
No, that's quite all right. Ms. Berg, that motion to reopen based on the situation, current situation in Mexico, does that speak countrywide? I mean, that there are no areas that...
We believe that there is violence throughout the country, and we've talked about the drug wars between the different cartels and between the government and the cartels, and it's happening both along the border and in some of the other areas of Mexico that the drug cartels are using as trafficking areas to bring their drugs up to the United States.
And would the appellant in this case be returning to one of the areas where the violence has been identified?
We believe there's danger of violence throughout the country. We believe it's more dangerous in certain areas, clearly along the border. Ciudad Juarez, there are, I believe, 1,400 killings in the last year, Tijuana, many beheadings. But we believe there's violence in many areas of the country where these drug cartels are vying for turf and for pass to send their drugs to the United States. In any event, Your Honor, we believe that alternatively, that you should grant the petitions for review. And before we address our arguments, I'd like to address several things in the respondent's brief. Referring first to page 6 of the brief in the statement of the case, the respondent states, Lagunas is a native and citizen of Mexico who initially entered the United States without inspection in 1997, subsequently obtained lawful permanent resident status in 1990. Obviously, that's a typographical error. Citing to the two record pages referred to by the respondent, 307 and 345, the correct date of entry is 1977. And I'm sure it's simply a typographical error, but it does point to a very interesting and very important point. And that is what this court has said in Akinyemi and what the Board of Immigration Appeals has said in Matter of Marin. And that length of residence is important in these cases. And how long the person has resided in the United States is important. Now, the respondent says the immigration judge referred to a period of permanent residence, lawful permanent residence, but that's not what the cases say. They talk about length of residence in the United States, in this case, some 31 years ago. Also, the government at page 8 of their brief at the top says, Lagunas was sentenced to 5 months imprisonment and 2 years probation, and refers to page 325 of the record, part of the criminal record here, but doesn't say what the sentencing judge had recommended and what actually happened, that he served this time in the Salvation Army. And it says in the record, what the court strongly recommends, that defendant's imprisonment be served at the Salvation Army due to his stable employment history and as a reliable provider for his family. And it also points out something else that is very interesting, that neither the board and the immigration judge address something very important, and that is rehabilitation. This court said
and,
an academic...
Excuse me. I know you want to get to some of the corrections, but I do want you to get to how you get around the problem with him being convicted of a crime. And this case, the matter of Flores, that case, it recognizes selling counterfeit documents inherently involved deception. And that's what happened here. I mean, I still have a... you can make these corrections or suggestions of error and point that out, but that goes to the heart of the case.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
I don't see how you get past first base unless you can deal with that.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Well, it is our position that he was not convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude and that Flores is distinguishable. It was a 1980 decision, and if we look to matter of Cerna, S-E-R-N-A, case cited by both of us in the government and myself, matter of Cerna, S-E-R-N-A, involved possession of these fraudulent documents. And what in that decision issued some 12 years after Flores, the Board of Immigration Appeals distinguished and said that if it had been for possession of a fraudulent visa, they would have had perhaps a different ruling. But here we have people coming for documents in order to work to feed their families. We believe that what he did here was not inherently base, vile, or depraved. And therefore, it is our position that if we look at Cerna, it was not a crime involving moral turpitude. Now, what Cerna says also is something that the board now in this case and in the immigration judge's decision, they did not do. Cerna clearly points out the rule of leniency applies, citing the link that at page 586 of the Cerna decision, pointing out that it is clear, equally clear, any doubts in deciding such questions, that is, whether or not it's a crime involving moral turpitude, must be resolved in the alien's favor. Now, when Flores was issued in 1980, Judge Williams, there was before the 1986 Immigration Act. The 1986 Immigration Act added these provisions about requiring someone to have a document in order to get a job. In other words, the employer would be sanctioned if the person did not have the adequate documents to get the employment. So it was subsequent to that. And so at the time of Flores in 1980, they were talking about a person getting a permanent resident card to enter the United States. We don't have that here in Cerna. We don't have that here in Mr. Laguna Salgado's case. It has involved a different situation, people needing documents in order to get employment, in order to feed their family. We would submit that what the petitioner has done is not inherently evil, base, depraved, and was not a crime involving moral turpitude. Now, the government cites to...
There are multiple Social Security numbers that you're passing out. Apparently, that's one thing that happened here. That's pretty serious stuff, isn't it?
Your Honor, as my understanding, he did not plead guilty to multiple. He did testify that there were multiple involved. But it's our position that that in and of itself was not a crime involving moral turpitude because it was not base or vile, and was not intending by what he did to defraud anyone. They did not think the documents were real. He did not present them to be real numbers or real Social Security cards. And therefore, there was not an intent to defraud those individuals. And we would submit that that's the difference here. What was his intent? Was his intent to defraud or not? And we would submit that there was not an intent to defraud. The government cites... Yes.
In the case of the green cards, is there a fraud upon the government?
This individual was not saying that these cards were officially government-issued cards, nor were the people coming saying, I want this card so I can travel outside the country or I can try to petition for a family member. It was simply saying that they wanted them. They had been coming to his brother, who had been apparently running this and having this operation in the basement of the building. The brother passed away. The people came to him. And he eventually relented and tried it and did it.
So your bottom line is if someone knowingly transfers documents and it's for good reason so people can get work and they can feed their families, that's okay.
Even if
the documents have been unlawfully produced, even though it's very clear they're false documents, if it's for a good purpose, as you articulate, I mean, that's really what you're asking us to do.
Your Honor, I'm not saying
it doesn't qualify as a crime of moral turpitude.
A crime of moral turpitude.
Right.
I'm saying
if it's for a good purpose.
Well, what the government is saying is that he had evil intent. They're saying that he had scienter. We're saying that he didn't have evil intent. The Attorney General in his recent decision...
So then we would have to determine each time how someone thought the unlawful or illegal documents or counterfeit documents were going to be used. And doesn't that fly in the face of the whole statute? I mean, isn't the point to try to rein that kind of conduct in?
Well, Your Honor, what I believe what the government has said is that a crime involving moral turpitude is something that's inherently base, vile, and depraved. It is our position that if we're going to look at what happened and say, okay, is this moral or is this immoral, is this evil or is this not evil, then yes, I think what the purpose was behind it should be looked at. Now, once again, I would say the rule of leniency, and that this any doubt should be resolved in favor of the petitioner. As to Silva Trevino, the recent decision from November 2008 cited by the respondent, the finding of moral turpitude, the Attorney General said in that case at page 706, requires that the perpetrator have committed the reprehensible act with some form of scienter. Some form of scienter, page 706. Now, this is the Attorney General's latest determination or latest statement on just what is moral turpitude and what is not. So he's saying it requires an act committed by the perpetrator, and the act be reprehensible, and there be some form of scienter. We would submit, Your Honor, that under that definition, that latest definition of the Attorney General, that Mr. Laguna Salgado did not commit a crime involving moral turpitude. And as to several other points we've discussed in our brief, why we believe this term now has become so confused and is so vague and so nebulous. Flores, the case cited by the government, says the crime involving moral turpitude is nebulous. The Attorney General in Silvano Trevino, just said in November, it's a term the courts have struggled with. This court in L.E. last year said it is ambulatory, notoriously plastic, open-ended. It's anything but clear. It's anything but clearly it's not defined in the Act. We're not sure what it means. We're constantly struggling. What is moral? What is immoral? Is this a crime involving moral turpitude or not?
Mr. Berg, if a person in this situation received certain monies for the passing or the creation of the cards and let's say it amounted to $3,000 and failed to pay the federal income taxes on them, would the addition of that factor of failure to pay the taxes elevate the collective act into one of moral turpitude?
Good question, Your Honor. Obviously, he was not convicted of that, and that was not an issue here, and I understand it's a hypothetical question.
Judge Williams, sure. Obviously, this case is critical, and we've got to focus on the rights and of the appellant and the government. Mm-hmm. But as we look past whatever ruling let's say that we were disposed to be favorable to your position, what are the limits on this? Is this because this case we don't have specific dollars and we don't know whether a tax fraud was involved or whether he was in aid of perhaps other tax fraud, so by passing these cards? What is the defining parameters of what you are asking us to do here?
Your Honor, I'm not asking you to address whether he committed tax fraud. That was not an issue here. And I think we look at what was did
well,
he
I want to speak to the moral turpitude, the dimensions of that. I appreciate your position that it can get pretty foggy and reading the cases sometimes are not as helpful as one would like. Mm-hmm. But what I'm trying to get to the parameters of moral turpitude here. I mean, it is a fraud on the government of a sort. I understand your position about what he's trying to help. Certainly, if he was handing out a two counterfeit 20s or two counterfeit 50s at the same time he was passing these, I think we'd be pretty close to moral turpitude, wouldn't we?
Well, that would be a different matter. We're not talking about counterfeit documents that could be used to purchase things. We're not talking about a counterfeit or any other type of counterfeit document for specifically to defraud the government like a counterfeit money would be. I would submit, Your Honor, under the facts that we have before us here, what this gentleman pled guilty to under the totality of the circumstances was not a crime involving moral turpitude. I reserve whatever time I have. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Berg.
Mm-hmm.
May it please.
Also, you're going to help me with your last name.
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Paul Signarowitz, and I represent the Attorney General.
Thank you, Mr. Signarowitz.
Petitioner in this case, I should start by addressing his motion to reopen, which I'd like to remind the Court is not in the facts of this case, and it's not properly before this case. Petitioner was convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude. He was convicted of fraud.
I think Mr. Berg was only asking us to hold it.
Yeah.
I don't think he's trying to incorporate the motion into these proceedings, but I appreciate your point.
Yes, Your Honor.
So do you think we should hold a case till it's ruled on? That's the question.
I'm sorry?
Should we hold this case, a decision in this case, until the motion to reopen has been ruled on?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
This would be, I'd also point out that this would be his second motion to reopen, and he's also both time and number barred on that. And there's a precedent on this case to move forward with this decision. I'd like to continue with my argument, ma'am.
All right.
Thank you. This was a crime involving moral turpitude. He's convicted of fraud, which there's precedence on, Jordan versus DeGeorge. He's never attacked that conviction. He's never said, I wasn't convicted of fraud. And fraud is a known crime involving moral turpitude. So as you point out, Judge Williams, that he's never gotten past that. For what he's trying to say is, in this instance, we should look at why maybe it's not a crime involving moral turpitude. And the decision of the agency, both the immigration judge and the board, were sound in this case. The immigration judge pointed out this is a crime that involved deliberate deception, that it impaired a lawful government function. The board, citing Flores, which was precedent similar to this case, said this is a crime, inherently it involves fraud. Inherently, and it also points out, which he didn't address at all, that it impedes a government function with deceit or dishonesty. The definition of crimes involving moral turpitude, there's probably a million adjectives thrown out there, but two of the most compelling that come from the Flores case that they cite are morally reprehensible and intrinsically wrong. And that is what this case was about. That's what he did. There was dishonesty. It was inherent. The fraud was inherent in what he did. What he's trying to say is that I just passed these to help them along. What he's convicted of is knowingly transferring documents that were false. Someone knew, the aliens that were dealing with the petitioner in this case, they didn't think that they were dealing with the government. They knew they were dealing with someone that wasn't the government. And any time those documents are used, they're used on their face, it appears that they're issued by the government.
Was he doing
they
this
weren't.
Out of the goodness of his heart, or was he charging people
to buy
these documents?
He was actually charging quite a bit, in some instances up to $100. We know from the facts that he did this for a 3-year period. There were as many as 50 aliens that came to him.
Was he involved when his brother was running it?
He was not involved, Your Honor, with the brother. He practiced this after the brother died. The brother passed away. He took over the business. He perfected it. He worked on it. I mentioned that it was morally reprehensible. We know from the facts, from the testimony, that they sent the kids out of the room when these people came to buy immigration documents. So they knew it was wrong. He admitted it was wrong. He admitted both that he pled to this as a fraud offense and that it was wrong and he wouldn't do it again. So the equities are not in his favor, but that's the balancing of equities is not before this court. That goes to his cancellation of removal, which this court would not have jurisdiction to review. Subject to your questions further, did I answer that, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you. And further, I'd address that it's not constitutionally void for vagueness. This court has said recently in Alley, the most recent case on that, that this board, this the board is both required to and entitled to consider whether it's or not it's a crime involving moral turpitude. It's correctly in their lane and nowhere else. And at this stage, particularly where there's precedent on this fraud, a known and frequently found to be a crime involving moral turpitude, we need not go further. And the immigration judge, once he had that conviction, he said, "This is a known crime involving moral turpitude." And in his findings, he point out, you've got deliberate deception, impairing a government function. This is definitely the kind of thing that's a crime involving moral turpitude, consistent with this court's findings in recent cases, crimes that involve dishonesty and fraud. I'd also like to argue that in terms of his due process complaints, that this was a full and fair hearing, and that to date he has not shown any prejudice. Subject to your questions, that concludes my oral argument.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Narowitz. Mr. Berg.
Judge Williams, as to your question, I believe that the court should hold it in abeyance. Salgado was also time and number barred. The board reopened sua sponte, as they can and they should, when there are facts brought to its attention, such as changed country conditions. The board and the Mikhail must consider these factors. In the Mikhail versus Mukasey case in 2007, this court said that those things must be considered. So the board can and should, and I believe will, given an opportunity, reopen the proceedings. As to whether what the petitioner did was morally reprehensible, we would submit that it is not morally reprehensible. It was malum prohibitum, not malum in se, and therefore it is not a crime involving moral turpitude. We thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.